So you know how you should be scared of the ocean? I mean, of course you should be. The sea is a cruel mistress alongside a mysterious one. You've doubtless heard the tidbit that we have charted more of the farthest reaches of the cosmos than we have of the big puddle that's just down the road. Every structure and vessel that we float out onto that big blue abyss is a comparative island of safety and stability, defacing the chaotic tides of the sea with steel specks of civilization in the form of ships and oil rigs. The thing is, though, those are still incredibly dangerous places. Today's story is one such reminder why deep-sea oil divers are paid so much, why the divers are constantly refused life insurance policies, and why oil companies are the shadiest creatures on planet Earth and should never be trusted. We've all heard of the Byford Dolphin incident. Well, here is an example of how several divers got sucked into a pipe at literally a few hundred miles an hour and were abandoned to their fate. The Paria Fuel Incident. Please leave a like and a comment on this video because it really helps me in the algorithm. That ever familiar smell. How I love it so. Do you not recognise it? It's not floral notes of a blooming spring, nor is it the aroma of your favourite bakery with a fresh batch awaiting you. No, for it is instead something even better. It's your liberation from that one bad habit that's been haunting you for far too long. That's right, boys, it is my beloved hubby, Fume. Fume is the gold standard in flavoured air devices that has been making waves in the scene and blazing trails, managing to attain the status of premier without any need for such things as electricity or vapour. He's all air in there. With a masterfully crafted wooden chassis, you can suck them dry whilst being able to fidget with the shaft, because that controls how much flavour hits your throat with a cleverly designed airflow valve that satisfyingly clicks with every tug and twist. But hey, that's enough glazing the shaft. What about the flavours? Well, I'm very glad I made you ask, because Fume has an incredibly tasteful and varied catalogue for you to choose from crisp mint to orange vanilla. I can assure you, there's a taste profile perfectly suited for your developed tastes. What's that? You want to know my preferred flavour? Well, I am part of Team Black Licorice. I've been waking up every morning... proudly blacked. And let's just say, ever since I got Fume, I've been closing the door on the doorknobs. My staff can actually grip the door in the office now without having to wipe my slobber off of it. Thank you, Fume. I love you, Fume. So you can grab that old vape and stop returning its calls. It should get a job, because Fume is here, and it should be worried about him. So if you want to get in on this action and finally vanquish that one bad habit, you need only scan the QR code on the screen or go to tryfume.com/dankula to get your free topper when you order a journey pack. Again, scan the QR code on the screen or go to tryfume.com/dankula for a free topper when you order a journey pack. And now, thankfully, back to the video. The 25th of February 2022, just off the coast of the scenic little freckle known as Trinidad and Tobago, we have a group of five men preparing for a rudimentary dive. For context, Paria Fuel Tradings, a subsidiary of the state-owned Trinidad Petroleum Holdings, was running an installation off the coast of Pointe-Pierre in the Gulf of Paria. Thus the name. These five men from LMCS Limited were contracted by Paria Fuel Tradings to repair a section of pipe running from the mainland refinery out into the open ocean that would be used to refuel tankers. The section of 30-inch diameter pipe requiring repairs ran at roughly 365 metres in length, with its deepest point at around 15 metres underwater. And it turns out that the pipe had a leak. By complete coincidence, LMCS had performed the exact same job on the same stretch of pipe 2 years earlier on the opposite side in berth 5. So how would berth 6 be any different? This was just a routine repair. Well, for this, I will have to give a brief aside as to how such repairs are usually done. You see, first things first, the section of pipe would have to be drained of oil. Because it's a fucking oil pipeline, so of course it would. This would usually happen over the course of a few days, so as to ensure that all of the Harkonnen Huel is thoroughly extracted. Next step would be the insertion of two plugs over the mouth of the pipe, with the first being an inflatable front plug that would be lodged inside the pipe before being inflated. Its purpose was, of course, to stop water from getting into the pipe, but also to stop any fumes from the leftover oil residue coming out during the job. The second plug would go over the first and would be a mechanical plug as opposed to inflatable. Its function was to ensure that the first plug is secured and to protect the first plug from molten metal falling onto it. Because the crew are going to have to use grinding and welding equipment, and the very last thing you want is the sparks flying onto a fucking rubber plug. The crew would essentially cut off the now plugged section of damaged pipe, grind it down flat, and from there weld on a fresh mouth for the pipe. Then from there they can return to the surface and safely remove both plugs by deflating and fishing them out from the new mouth, which would be above sea level. From there, you refill the pipeline and happy days. For those couple of hours of work, you've earned yourself an obscenely good paycheck. Deep sea welders get paid ridiculous amounts of money, but it's hazard pay, as you're all about to find out. Because of the fact that the majority of this work would be underwater, a habitat would have to be constructed for the divers to perform their work in. Without getting into the nitty-gritty of how hyperbaric chambers or diving bells work, just picture the paddle boat scene from Pirates of the Caribbean. It's basically a little bubble of air underwater for divers to comfortably exist in whilst performing their excruciatingly dangerous job. So this routine repair should be just like last time, right? Well, our five men being Faisal Kurban, Rishi Nagasar, Yusuf Henry, Kazim Ali Jr. and Christopher Boodram all donned their wetsuits and flippers, goggled up and cracked into the job at around 2:40 p.m. Upon entering the cramped habitat, which was pressurised at 1.45 bars, the lads proceeded to make one fuck-up that would cost them dearly. For the sake of convenience and ease, they decided to try deflating and removing the inflatable plug from inside the chamber, as opposed to after the riser extension is installed, allowing the plug to be fished out above sea level. This one single little shirking of procedure wouldn't be an absolutely massive deal if not for the fact that the pipe had substantially lower air pressure than the 8x8 foot habitat, and that inside the pipe, there were air pockets. Remember, this was filled with oil. However, due to the pipe snaking along uneven terrain on the sea floor, there were bumps that raised the elevation enough that there were small pockets of air amongst all of the dinosaur juice. And today, my boys, we're going to have a physics lesson. What happens when two wildly different air pressures suddenly make contact? Well, they have a very quick and very violent fight with each other before they equalise and settle down, levelling out. This is all well and good, but if you're unlucky and or incompetent enough to be standing right there when these two different air pressures have their little atmospheric domestic, well, very bad things happen. Well, it's a very good thing that that would never happen to our plucky five divers, because after all, that rubber plug is in the way. But wouldn't you know it, our plucky five decided to tempt fate with a wrench, because they were about to remove said plug. And yes, we've got footage. Yeah, see how it cuts to black just like that? That wasn't us cutting the feed. It literally happened that fast. With any fraction of a fucking second, what is known as a Delta P event occurred, which resulted in all five of the men being sucked down into the pipe in less than the blink of an eye. The audio continues on, and you can go and look that up on your own time, but it's a very unpleasant listen. Between the really shit audio quality of the GoPro and the dissonant muffled screaming of the five men, I'm going to hand wave the Edge persona for once and just tell you all straight up that it's not for the faint-hearted. You can go and find the audio online yourself, but we're not showing it here because it's fucking unnerving. All five divers, after being dragged down the pipe and ferried along 200 metres very, very fucking quickly, the men, ironically enough, got brought to one of the air pockets that caused this whole commotion. And sadly, for all five men, they survived. They sadly survived. Yes, they sadly survived. Because, as is apparently routine now for videos I do about subjects like this, things are about to get a lot worse. So, why is this a bad thing? Well, because now they were all in a cramped 30-inch pipe deep underwater in the pitch black, with at most around 6 to 8 inches of air between the ceiling of the pipe and the oil-infused flood water. And it's also still flooding, by the way, so that's great. And to top it all off, they all have very severe injuries from being essentially fucking teleported down this pipe. So again, sadly, they survived. At least Bifur Dolphin was mercifully instant. I know, what an absolutely wonderful and delightful set of circumstances. So how were our boys holding up in the immediate aftermath? Well, first, we have Rishi, who's got himself some head injuries, which are leaving him severely concussed and dazed. Then we have Faisal, with a fucked up left rib that is actually going through his lung, how fucking lovely, alongside a fractured skull and a brain hemorrhage. Then it's Yusuf, with a dislocated left hip, and a broken left hand, and a broken left foot. Then Kasim, with a shattered left fibula and tibia, with a nice smattering of blood loss. And we finish with Chris, who's got a broken arm and a broken left foot. Now, as you may intuit from the way that I listed the gentlemen, some were in better shape than others, and some were closer to the berth. All five also came to this conclusion, and as such, Chris and Kasim volunteered to try and make their way back towards berth 6 to try and get some help. Thus, our plucky duo start agonisingly trekking through the oily water using nothing but their broken hands to see a few feet in front of them. With Chris leading the way, they slowly manage to inch their way along the pipe and manage to have a miracle occur. Their equipment was sucked down with them, and what they found was a couple of oxygen tanks along the way, thus giving the gents a slight chance at rescue. Fantastic. Slight issue, however. Kasim wasn't looking too hot with, you know, the blood loss and all of that. As such, he volunteered to stay behind and he gave Chris both oxygen tanks. So Big Chris soldiered on, eventually reaching the bend of the pipe and the home stretch. Well, potential home stretch. Because you see, due to the nature of their insertion, you know, being unplanned and incredibly violent, paired with the lack of any sort of visuals whatsoever, it meant that Chris didn't actually know what direction he was going in. This meant that when he took that climb up towards the berth, there was a 50-50 chance that he would be at the open berth 6. There was every possibility that he got tumbled around in the suck and ended up going in the opposite direction, and would instead be greeted with an inflatable rubber plug, cucking the lads out of ever seeing their families ever again, and condemning them to an agonisingly slow death in an unreachable, oil-slicked grave. However, Chris won the coin toss, and he finally managed to surface back in the habitat. Though he wasn't able to climb out due to the water level receding around 4 feet, so he did the best thing he could. He powered through the bends because, keep in mind, they rapidly descended around 15 metres and Chris just reascended it. He then grabbed a chain that was dangling into the berth and he started screaming for help with every ounce of energy that he had in him. After 20 minutes of deafening silence, a couple of rescue divers finally made an appearance. Bewildered at the sight of someone actually being alive after what just happened. Chris was promptly lifted out of the berth and immediately rushed to the hospital, though not before informing his rescuers of the situation in the pipe, and how everyone down there was still alive and that there were large air pockets in the pipe. Then, after a cursory study to scope out the feasibility of a hypothetical rescue attempt, all staff were banned from going down to the berth. What the fuck? Yeah, it turns out that people were rather hesitant to do anything in case another Delta P event occurred. After initially organising some of the boys for a rescue, one of the assistants apparently bitched out of the operation at the last minute due to how dicey the situation was. This resulted in them scrapping all attempts at a rescue until commercial diving equipment could arrive on site, because the only diving gear that they had that wasn't sucked down the pipe all had tethers attached that could only go out so far, around 90 metres or so. This might sound like a reasonable enough excuse if not for the fact that Chris told them that Kasim was just at the bend of the pipe by a smaller air pocket, and that the diving equipment could be semi-reasonably recovered along the route. So instead of just twiddling their thumbs whilst their co-workers died painfully, they at least authorised the installation of the riser over the berth. Not only so the job could be finished, but also to keep any more floodwater from getting into the pipes. And from there, they started wasting valuable time by sticking tethered cameras and drones down the berth. And then there was Rishi. You see, of the five forsaken souls down in the pipe, Rishi was the first one in, and as such, he was the furthest along in the pipe. Despite his head injuries and the knowledge that Chris and Kasim were going to get help at berth 6, Rishi thought that he wasn't just going to sit idly by and slowly suffocate to death in a pitch black waterlogged tube. As such, he started crawling his way in the other direction towards berth 5. From a glance, this may seem to be quite smart, as despite the plug being present there, that would not only be a decently sized air pocket towards the berth because of the plug, but it would also get him closer to the surface, and as such, more likely for his frantic banging from inside the pipe to be heard. A couple of issues, however. One was that due to the Delta P pressing it along, the stretch to berth 5 had the highest concentration of oil residue in it, making the crawl a lot more arduous and the air pockets a lot more poisonous. And as for the other issue, well, we'll get into that. Due to the presence of the scuba tank on the bend of berth 6, authorization was given to open up access to berth 5. Fantastic. Rishi's right there, so he's totally going to be saved. Right? Well, here's the thing. By this point, the remaining four guys had all been down there for roughly 14 hours. And for those amongst you who are familiar with diving, a realization might have just occurred. In order to rescue the men, you would first need to let them gradually depressurize. And opening berth 5 would have definitely let them depressurize. Just not gradually. This means that the second they greenlit opening berth 5, it went from a rescue mission to a recovery one, though they might not have realised it. Because if the divers weren't dead already, this action will kill them. And to add insult to injury, upon berth 5 being opened, they immediately stuck a drone down there and it got fucking stuck. Deciding to cut their losses and get this entire mess out of the way, they then decide to just remove the habitat on berth 6 and flood the pipe with salt water, the force of which will push all of the equipment and the bodies up for easier recovery. Except, they managed to cock that up as well, because the crane that was lifting the habitat fucking snapped and all of it plunged down to the seabed. This is a shit show. Literally, everything that could go wrong is going fucking wrong. Despite that little hiccup, however, the water goes in and eventually every body is recovered, being shot out the top of the riser and plopping back into company hands like that weird salmon cannon that people keep making edits of. I'm sorry, but this story needed at least a little comedic relief because holy fucking shit. Thing is though, all of the bodies did come out of the pipe except for Rishi's. For whatever reason, his corpse was just lodged down in the pipe and it wouldn't budge. So, another company is then brought in whose sole job it is to send a pig down the pipe. Okay, it's not a literal pig, and before you start accusing me of strange racist halalegories, a pig is essentially a big cylinder that they fire down the tube to scrape the sides of it and push anything in the pipe out of the other side. Yes, they literally shot the body of Rishi with a pork cannon. So, with this calamity finally settled, what of the public response? Well, almost immediately, the government of Trinidad and Tobago opened up an inquiry into what the fuck happened. This then immediately spiralled into multiple court cases, one of which is still, from what I've gathered, currently ongoing. But judging by the fact that the current case is about corporate manslaughter, I think it's fairly safe to assume the general consensus is that of a big fucky-wucky on behalf of Paria. And I'm not going to get into it because it's still ongoing, but I can almost guarantee that they will not be punished enough, if at all, and it's hardly going to bring much in the terms of closure to those affected. Speaking of which, what of Chris? Well, he's understandably become incredibly traumatised and riddled with survivor's guilt by the whole ordeal. A sharp contrast to what he was during the incident, being the brave volunteer who stepped up and took a leap of faith for his co-workers like a real G. He quite understandably has remained landlocked ever since, with the only experiences of him in water being the shower and the supposed daily night terrors he suffers about his time in the pipe. And speaking of the pipe, apparently immediately after getting out of berth 6, Chris asked if he could be given a couple of air tanks so that he could go back down there and save his friends. And they didn't let him. Which, on the one hand, sure, the situation even back then was precarious enough with all of the shit going on, and to be quite honest, letting Big Chris go back down there with his fucked up broken quap limbs was probably a very bad idea. But maybe he might have actually been able to save his friends instead of doing what the company did and just leaving them to die. Yeah, throughout this, I needed to keep reminding myself of just how recent this was. These sorts of events are usually far enough in the past that there's some degrees of separation between that snapshot of time and now. But this was just in 2022. This massive fuck-up was post-COVID. And I think it's only fitting, seeing as how the 3-year anniversary of this event was only, as of filming, just a few weeks ago. So, what can we glean from this yarn? That once again, companies are unscrupulous and can't be trusted. That time is always of the essence and must be grabbed by the horns. How about the fact that the scariest thing in the ocean isn't a tsunami or the odd spooky kaiju? It's liquid physics. Or how about the fact that the most dangerous thing in the ocean is the water itself?
It's Camp Dankula on YouTube! Everybody subscribe!